welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So, join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Today's guest is back for the second time. His story was so huge that we couldn't possibly get this into one conversation. So I am delighted that he was able to come back and join us for the second part in this conversation. Now, last week in part one, and if you haven't listened to it, I can't recommend it enough. This guy is a true inspiration. You know, we never know people's stories. We see people walking around, but you've no idea what people are going through. And listening to other people's stories often, in fact, nearly all the time, helps us with ours. And Alan's story is unbelievable. You know, he was a soldier, he has killed people, he's had his friends dying in his arms, he was a drug addict, he's been hugely successful. This guy has packed so much in his life, from really terrible things to absolutely amazing things. So this week we are going into the amazing things and talking about his awakening and what got him from that dark place to this most amazing place that he's in right now. And when you get to know him, he is so genuine and you can feel this guy's energy and love and compassion. So I'm not going to keep you here with me rambling on. Let me now take you to the conversation, the part two, with Alan Kleinhans. So Alan, welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation, part two. Your story was so detailed and big that I felt we needed to talk some more because we just got onto the awakening side of things and we didn't have enough time. And the awakening is a really important part of life. It's an important part of healing the pain. So I really wanted to dive in and talk to you and grill you, in fact, about your awakening process, because I'm coming across so many people with so much pain at the moment, and I'd just like to be able to help them and share people's stories who have gone through that process. So if we can just recap quickly what your story was for any new listeners, and then we can go into the awakening side.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Janet, for bringing me back to your show. I really appreciate the opportunity to share some more. My intention is always to share my own story in the hope that it inspires somebody else to recognize that no matter what they're facing in life, it's always surmountable. We often get trapped, you know, thinking that our problems are insurmountable and they become pervasive and permanent in our own minds. And once we reach that place, we then drop into this place called learned helplessness. So I've been there myself over the period of my life several times. It's not a nice place to be. So if anybody's listening to this and it inspires them to begin hoping and believing again that they can actually get past what they're facing, then obviously that would be fantastic. Just to recap, like you said, for first-time listeners, I'm somebody who's had some challenges in terms of life. We all have challenges. I've had some severe adversities, and that's something that we all go through too. I always talk about varying degrees of trauma. We always encounter trauma throughout our life. Some of us encounter very subtle, mild trauma. Others of us encounter very severe and tragic trauma, but we all encounter it, and it shapes us as human beings. It shapes us as adults, and we end up living out of this flawed paradigm that we created in our earliest years of our lives when we formed these belief systems about who we are and what we're going to do in order to get by in life or survive or achieve success or get the love of the people around us. But it really does come from that wounded place in our minds and in our hearts that there's something missing or that there's something wrong with us. And I was exactly the same as a young boy, starved for love in my own mind. Always felt that my parents didn't have enough time for me. Only child, went to two private schools, all boys, all white. Grew up in racist South Africa, lived next door to a police station for the first 6 years of my life. experienced brutality in the police yard next door that nobody should have to ever have to witness, let alone a four-year-old boy. Watched black people get beaten to death by white policemen. As I got older, I was bullied severely and teased relentlessly, and it shaped my psychology. It shaped what I thought about myself. You know, as we grow up as kids, we always hear the phrases, sticks and stones break your bones, but words will never hurt me. But what we forget is that words actually do hurt. They hurt very severely for young children who hear the words over and over and over again. Seeps down into the unconscious of a child. We are very impressionable as young children from the world around us. Our parents don't intend to ever hurt us, but we also pick up on their criticism and their fears and their belief systems and their rules and their values. And so when we are adults, we think that we are self-conscious, and we think we are, in terms of being self-conscious, we think we're aware, self-aware. We think we have shaped our own psychology, but we don't realize that actually our psychology is shaped by the belief systems we picked up in the earliest years of our lives that we couldn't actually question when they were inserted like software into a hardware system. You know, software has been inserted into our minds, into our hardware system, and we haven't even been able to question it. Do we agree with that? Is that something we want to believe as adults? You know, when I'm older, will I want to believe that kind of stuff? You know, do I want to entertain that kind of criticisms that we pick up as we're growing up? So, you know, I got to the point where I entered the military. I was 18. I was intensely trained to use a patrol mortarist and an RPG-7 rocket launcher. I ended up in Angola. I never, ever thought I'd have to use these weapons in person. But I went to war. As was a covert operation, I'd been sworn to secrecy by the South African government. We weren't allowed to be in Angola. It was illegal. We were up there for 7 months. And during that period of time, I lost lots and lots of friends. And even more drastically, I had to kill other people, lots of them, using my weapons. You know, and there's something extremely intense about pulling a trigger and watching your target disappear, you know, into pieces.
Knowing that they're people as well, it must be horrific.
Exactly, knowing that they're people. I mean, I loved people when I was a kid. Children are just naturally loving beings. You know, we're naturally loving as kids. Even when we get severely beaten down, we still are craving love, and we'll still do whatever we can to get love, and we'll still gravitate towards the compassionate self in ourselves at a deeper level. And I was one of those kids too, but by the time I came out of the military, I was severely traumatized, post-traumatic stress, very angry, volatile, very confrontational, very conflicted. Went to two Catholic schools, had religious dogma shoved in my head since age of four at Sunday school where it started. By the time I came out of the military, I was 21 years of age, and I was severely conflicted and demonized, and I believed that that there's no coming back from that. I think it's commandment number 6, actually, is thou shalt not kill. It always fascinated me why it was so far down on the list. It really should be like number 1. Well, anyway, whatever you believe, right? I mean, all 10 commandments are designed to inflict.
They have value.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They have their value, but at the same time, those 10 commandments inflict a deep fear in us. You know, I was a God-fearing person because I was taught to fear God. And so, you know, very shortly after I came out of the military, I decided to start studying. I was introduced to personal development and psychology. My very first book was Think and Grow Rich. It blew my mind. And very soon after that, I began to recognize that I was demonized by my own thoughts around religion and God and what I had done in Angola and how that was punishable. And I'd earned the wrath of God. That's what I kept thinking in my mind. I'd earned the wrath of God. And I began to fear death. I mean, even in the military, I didn't really fear death. What I feared was coming home without my buddies. And when I came home without my buddies, I was a lot of anger there too, a lot of guilt around that. I mean, why did I survive and my best friends died? And that kind of guilt and shame really torments military veterans, and that's why they take their own lives, because they don't feel that their life is not worth living if their buddies didn't come home. And so that didn't really scare me. What scared me was that I'd done that, and that ultimately, because of what I'd learned as a kid at school and Sunday school and through those Catholic schooling system, very severe religious dogma. And that's what prompted my decision to start studying religion. And it was many, many years later, after studying personal development and psychology and performance and success and achievement and sales and all that kind of stuff, that I came to the point where I had this amazing experience in Hawaii. I think I told you that last time, where I had this encounter with a turtle. I was asking for forgiveness from God and the soldiers I killed. I really felt that that was allowed me in that moment when I met that turtle. That turtle popped out of the water, this turtle. And it was like a sign from the universe, like, listen, we've heard your prayer. You know, let that go. Forgive yourself. We've forgiven you. Now, it was an extremely powerful moment. And then it was after that I was introduced to Neil Donald Walsh, Conversation with God. There was somebody in the audience that heard about my experience of the turtle the night before. He came up to me. He said, listen, I have a message for you. Have you heard of Neil Donald Walsh, Conversations with God, book 1, 2, 3? I said, no, I haven't. He said, well, this trilogy is something that you must read. This is the message I've been asked to give you. I didn't question where the message came from. I kind of got a feeling. I'd already studied physics by that stage, you know, consciousness. I was already studying philosophy. And I kind of knew that there was always a higher power. There was always an energy that flowed through us and to us. I didn't believe in the religious dogma of my youth that had been fed into my brain over and over. I believed that God was an energy.
Yeah. And you tend to sense that. You were just saying like you didn't question that. And I would imagine that when that happened, you had this energetic sense around you that I guess you could call intuition, that you're like, yes, I know that that is for me. That there's a knowing in these things, isn't there?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's very true, Janet, because I remember when I was sitting in but near the waterfall only several hours before that moment, that man, Kevin Beach, who lives in Norfolk, came up to me and said, have you heard of these books? Have you heard of these author? Several hours before that, I was sitting at that waterfall, you know, praying and saying, God, please, I'd like to ask for forgiveness so I can really accelerate my own healing. And at that moment, the place started vibrating. You know, my senses got sharper. The turtle popped out of the water, looked at me for 3 to 5 seconds. We had this connection, took a breath, disappeared out of the water. I thought, wow, you know, my prayer's been heard. So I had that sensation. Yeah, definitely. That, like you say, that connection to you. It's a sixth sense, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's a difficult one to explain, isn't it? Unless somebody has experienced it. It's so difficult to explain because words, I often say now, certainly with my experience, words are futile, and really words don't even explain that.
Absolutely. I love language, not only talking about English, but I love language. I do love English language because obviously I'm English, but I love English language because I loved English at school. It's my favorite subject, my only subject that I excelled at. I loved Shakespeare. I loved reading. I loved books. And obviously, naturally, when I began to read about personal development and psychology, I just absorbed them like a sponge. And I love reading. I love vocabulary. I love the meaning behind words. I love how most of our language is derived from Latin and Greek. And, you know, and when you look at the original meanings of a lot of those words, it's mind-blowing, you know, and how everything is actually so synchronistically woven together in perfection. But like you say, that sixth sense is very hard to understand. Language is very difficult to describe it because words are insufficient. However, all of us have that ability, and intuition is something that we all need to develop if we want to live a fulfilling life. I was talking about this morning, funny enough, Janet. Right this morning, I was on a call with a lady from India. Her name is Deva Dwaba. She runs an orphanage out there, an American lady who's been out there, living out there for a long time, running a charity. Her and I were talking about grace because we are both speakers on a workshop coming up, which is all about grace and what is grace. And we were asked to give our own definitions of grace. And just like you just said now, it's that sixth sense. It's like part of us that's connected to everything. It's the part of us that actually makes life function. We can't do life without grace. Life doesn't exist without grace. You know, we can be, you know, outcome focused, driven, high performance individuals with strategies, processes, systems and functions, et cetera, et cetera. However, all of that only happens if grace is present. And so that moment of grace with that turtle, and then that moment of grace with Kevin Beach when he came up to me, he said, listen, you must read these books. And I just trusted his message, and I bought them on the way back from Hawaii at LAX Airport in Los Angeles, and I began to read them. I couldn't put them down. That was my introduction to spiritual psychology, and then everything just escalated from there and accelerated, and I began to have my own spiritual awakening, which was amazing. And it's just been accelerating ever since. And it's been beautiful because I've been able to then take what I'd learned and really begin to organically, you know, create something that, which I deliver now, my own 3-day workshop, which I deliver online at the moment in the form of 2 days. Next year, when we deliver it offline again for the first time, it'll be 4 days. And it is all about that. It's called Awaken. I've got a private group on Facebook called The Awakened Soul. People say, well, what is an awakened soul? And I always say the same thing. I say, it's simply somebody who's come home to their heart and is living from their highest truth and recognizing that they are energetic, spiritual being, having a temporary human experience. And their only function here is to love and be compassionate and be kind.
Yeah. Now, just going from there, because that has taken you many years to get to that position. And it is very high level thinking and being. And also just nipping back to the grace, discussing grace, in a way, I don't know if it is impossible or just difficult to actually have the sense of grace without having gone through a very challenging time in your life. Grace seems to show up when you feel your life is falling apart. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. It's when you get to that point in your life when there's nothing left except grace. You know, when you've lost everything except grace, and you can never lose grace, you can never lose touch with your true self, you can never lose your connection with God or the universe or whatever you want to call it. you know, energy source, infinite power, a higher power, Allah, Krishna, Buddha, doesn't matter, Tao.
It's all the same.
All the same thing. And you know what's fascinating about people when they get stuck into religion, and I've got a friend of mine who's heavily indoctrinated by the Christian faith to the point where anything that he doesn't believe is good, he calls Satan, which is such just a lot of bollocks. It's all about fear. But really what people forget is that religion was created because man was superstitious about anything that made him feel fearful. And if you think about the average superstitions that we all carry around, you know, don't walk under a ladder, be careful of black cats, you know, crossing your path, don't open an umbrella indoors, don't put shoes on the table. You know, all these rubbish superstitions that have been told for so long through centuries that they've become so powerful in their energetic ability to really create pain and to create problems for people. And really, people forget that it's just belief. When you have a belief about something, it literally creates your experience. It literally unfolds around you because you are a hologram projecting your belief system onto the world around you. So as soon as you change your belief system...
Yeah, it actually changes your brain as well, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
So your belief actually has a physiological effect on you.
Absolutely.
And as does all of our experiences, has that physiological experience with us. So this journey that you went on to your awakening stage, which is clearly where you are at right now, because, you know, I am a member of your Awakened Soul group and it is incredible. And your following is just amazing. And you just hear people's stories and messages and you think, yes, this is a very powerful message. And I don't doubt for a moment that many of the people who follow you have had their own traumas and difficulties to get through. Now, obviously, the people who listen to me and who connect with me are going through those challenges too. But because I'm on my journey through my challenge, that's when I like to bring people like yourself in to have this conversation. So the part of this conversation is, what are the steps? Because to go from zero to hero is just too big. I have a bereaved parents group. And today, you know, I heard a message from one of my members, just so, so sad. And I just thought, how do you get from this really, you know, completely broken place? Where do you start by putting those pieces back together? And I know there's the system that people talk about with grief, you know, you go in denial and your depression and your anger and you go, yeah, that's fine. But what's the deeper stuff of the steps you can take? That's what I really want to dig down to.
That's a great question. And, you know, just while I've been listening to you talk about that, I've been just going back and I'm just thinking about, like, what was life like when I was at the darkest times of my life? And what was I trying to do? What was my intention each and every day? And really, many times, my intention each and every day, really, my goal was just to get through the day. A lot of the time, it was just get through the next hour. You know, it's interesting that you say the type of people that my message is attracting now. I mean, I've worked with Springbok rugby players. I've worked with the Natal Sharks rugby team in South Africa. I've worked with all the biggest banks in the world. I've worked with the military, the police. I worked with kids on crack. I worked with women who have been raped. However, now my message seems to be attracting people who they've been through some of the most challenging traumas, and they also are looking for some kind of deeper meaning for those challenges and those traumas. You know, when I think about where I was, you know, going through some of the toughest times, just thinking, okay, cool, how can I get away from the voice in my head? A lot of the time that was my drive, like, how can I shut this voice up in my head? That's when people start thinking about suicide. And I mean, I was suicidal for a long time, you know, substance abuse for 18 years. The last 5, 6, 7 years of the 90s for me were the worst times of my life, in spite of the fact that on the surface level, I looked like I had it down, right? I had it, you know, I was riding a nice, beautiful motorcycle, brand new, £10,000 worth of machinery, which I bought cash. I was working at Credit Suisse. I went from Credit Suisse to Citibank. I was in IT. I was making £25 an hour. I was working 7 days a week, every hour of overtime I could get. So I was making good money, but I was broke, living on my friend's couch and broken every sense of the word, spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, financially, just hating life, suicidal, contemplating suicide every day. You know, okay, today's the day I'm going to do it, right? I'm just going to need to get out of this pain. But then luckily, obviously, because I was fortunate, I guess, because I was introduced to the subject of psychology so many years before that, by that stage, 1999, when I went to the Tony Robbins workshop that I spoke about in the first interview you and I did. And again, that was grace for me, you know? I mean, I was led to that workshop. I had to borrow money to get there. There were so many things that nearly didn't happen. But yet I found myself there. And then I found myself having a one-on-one conversation with Tony in front of 1,500 people. And that was a moment of grace too, when I had that first experience of being unconditionally loved by another human being, a complete stranger who just poured his love into me and helped me to have a look at myself from a different set of eyes. You know, that had to be all grace. But, you know, just thinking about it, what led me there in all the moments of darkness when I thought, okay, today's the day I'm just going to go and jump under that train. I just got to get out of, I can't get away from this voice in my head, this feeling in my body, this like depression, this heavy, you know, lethargic feeling. And I had to drag myself out of bed and then take and have a line of cocaine just to wake myself up so I could get to work in the morning. Yeah. I think to answer that question, if people are in a dark place like that, what I say to addicts all the time, I work with addicts a lot. I'm working with a lot of people in recovery. I've actually just recently, just on this workshop we just did this past weekend, Awaken Online, we had 106 people from 15 countries coming in online on all different time zones. We had a bunch of people who were in recovery. What I say to all these people, no matter what trauma you're going through, no matter what pain you're trying to get away from or what you're trying to heal, you just got to get through the next hour. It's 1 hour at a time, one day at a time. And that phrase, one day at a time, that hashtag, one day at a time, ODAAT, is a popular hashtag amongst people in recovery. One day at a time. You just got to get through this day. And I used to just say, how can I get through this next hour? And then what I would do is I would pick up a book. So to answer that question is, what can people do when they're in the darkest times and they, you know, it's Monday and they think, oh my God, how am I going to get through this week? It's like, ask yourself, you know, what can I do right now to just get through the next hour? And what I would do is I would pick up a book. I was an avid reader. I was a voracious sponge for knowledge. And I was just reading everything I could get my hands on. I'm busy writing one. I've just been published in a book called Where's My Lemonade? 17 Authors, Inspirational Stories to Get Through the Toughest Times of Your Life. To answer that question, it's a great question. What can people do right now? What you can do right now, no matter who you are, wherever you are sitting, listening to this conversation, no matter what you're facing right now, let me just remind you of something. You are much bigger than life. You are much bigger than anything that life can throw at you. You are life itself in human form. You are so much bigger than you give yourself credit for. And it's very, very tough to remember that sometimes when you're going through a really dark time because you are so limited in your viewpoint at that particular moment in time. You're looking through the smallest lens when times are dark and you can't see the light. You can't see the wood for the trees often. And I've been there. You know, I've slept rough on the street. I've been bankrupt twice. I'm divorced because I was unfaithful, and I know what it's like to be heartbroken. I know what it's like to be addicted, substance abuse, you know, broke, nowhere to go, alone, hating life and thinking, okay, cool, what's the easiest way is just to check out. Let me go and land a train.
Mm. Because when you hate life, there's also part of you hating yourself as well. So when you're angry and, you know, just thinking from my perspective, losing a child, and the people who speak to me have often lost children, with it, there's so much wrapped up in that of not being angry with life, being angry with yourself. Could I have done better? Was it somehow my fault? You know, all of that. And I guess that's that voice in the head you were talking about that you think, oh, I just need to get away. The voice in the head is also feeding the pain.
Absolutely, without doubt, without doubt.
So to quieten that, what do we have?
You hit the nail on the head right now. This is such an important point. You know, I've studied 32 years now. I've studied everything to do with consciousness and performance and human development and psychology and, you know, child psychology, post-traumatic stress, neurology, you know, trauma intervention. I was just talking to Maxine. You know Maxine, my ex-wife. She's just in the next room here with my children. I'm at their place.
She was one of my conversations earlier on in my broadcast. I forget which episodes. Four, I think, is the one we did with Maxine.
Yeah, she's an amazing woman, just an amazing woman. And we're just talking earlier, we're talking about this very thing. I was reminding her about her expertise, you know, and what she studied over the last 30 years. She's been teaching 20 years. You know, she's exceptionally gifted teacher and facilitator, coach. She's a transpersonal psychotherapist, had 7 years of study at the London School of Transpersonal Psychotherapy, and then a dissertation after that on bereavement. She's done heart math certification, calling in the one. It's all about, for Maxine, is about heart-centered relationships and helping people to find love after heartbreak. She found her calling after her heartbreak with me. And I guess why I'm saying that is because you hit the nail on the head just now, is that people forget that that little voice in their heads, that voice is your worst enemy. Because when you are in a dark place, when you're in the lowest place of your life, that voice is your worst enemy, because that voice is all about judgment and self-criticism, because it wants to be right. Even if it's being right about you, and even if you're being right about yourself, you're giving yourself a hard time and you're being your own worst enemy. You are literally beating yourself up all day long when you're in the darkest times of your life. And you can't stop it. And you keep telling yourself over and over, I'm such a loser. You know, life sucks. I'm so, you know, why does this always happen to me? How come I always get this wrong? Why am I such an idiot? And people do that to themselves all day long, especially when it's tough. When times are tough, you're looking for, without even realizing it, we are unconsciously driven by a need for certainty. And so at the times of our life when we have the most amount of uncertainty, when we have zero hope and zero future in our mind, when we can see zero resolution, when there's just no way out, when everything, all the doors are closed, it's at that moment that our mind is at its strongest in terms of making us wrong, because it loves being right. And we love being right, even when we're being right about ourselves and it's causing us to suffer. And so people don't realize that's happening. You know, even 32 years of education, and I'm still educating myself. I'm still recognizing things about psychology. And if we just stop and pause for a second and think, wow, someone was asking me this earlier on my group about the unconscious mind. He asked me a question. He said, am I maybe overloading my unconscious mind with so many things to do? And I said, how can you even begin to limit the unconscious mind right now? Because the unconscious mind is unlimited. It's a million times more powerful than the conscious mind. When you're limiting your unconscious mind, you forget that you're limiting the mind of God, because the unconscious universal mind is the mind that keeps everything together. It's the universe that we live in. We plug into it. We forget that we're actually plugging into mind at three different levels, and we get trapped at the first level because it becomes critical by nurture. It's actually creative by nature, and that's where we get trapped for most of our lives, and the majority of us never ever leave that level. We never even realize that the unconscious is actually serving us if we allow it to serve us, but it can't serve us when we are consciously critical and unconsciously critical on a consistent basis. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with you? Why are you doing that wrong? Don't do it like that. I don't like those people. We say Asians. I don't like the Muslims. I don't like the Christians. I don't like the Catholics. I don't like myself.
It's infinite, surely.
All the time. It's just such a noise inside the head and around us all the time.
So we're being too noisy, aren't we? You know, we're just too noisy. And with all that conversation then, given that the subconscious mind is connected to infinite intelligence or God, whatever, and that is a state of all-knowing. So this language that we've given ourselves, that's been consciously fed to us, hasn't it? And then it kind of goes on this cyclone that we're not even then aware that it's whirring around, and that you don't always hear it or recognize it. But once you start training yourself,
people don't hear it. You're right, people don't hear it because it's just there in the background. It's white noise. They're not even aware of it until you make them conscious of it, and then they say, oh my God, I do have a voice in my head. I've never heard it before. There it is.
That's right. And once you then become aware of that, then you can take charge of that voice. Because I know certainly within my dark times, I've had that critical voice that has pummeled me to the ground, and I've been in such devastating, horrible places. And then I've become aware that that's happening, and I'm conscious of doing this. I bring in my nurture voice and I say, come on, Janet, you're actually doing really well right now. And I think that's an important lesson for us to get, is that we can control it, not just by quieting in it, but by nurturing it and getting that voice to say a different message once we become aware of doing that. And maybe that's one of those early steps before you can hit the quiet, where you then sit in the subconscious mind, like through meditation or being outdoors or those kind of things.
Yes, absolutely. It's spot on. I think if people take one thing away from this conversation, Janet, it would be my hope that they take this away. The conscience, which is a little voice in your head that you think is keeping you from doing the wrong things in life so that you can be a good person, is actually the same little critic, depending on the situation and how good or bad you feel about yourself. It comes down to that. And recognizing that that conscience is also a policeman, and it's always telling you about right and wrong. And as long as you believe in right and wrong, the contrast of right and wrong, or the duality, the context of duality of the ego self, then you're always going to be in pain. You're always going to be suffering because your mind is always looking for something to judge. It's always looking for what's wrong. It's always looking for what other people are doing wrong and what you're doing wrong. And so as long as you have that concept of right and wrong, you're going to suffer because there is no right and wrong. There just is what's unfolding. And if you label it, you are immediately putting yourself in one camp, in one box. That means there must be another box, the place that you are not. As soon as you label something, you now are in the opposite of what you don't like, whether you like it or not. So it's really recognizing that we are our own worst enemies. And we also are the salvation and the solution that we are looking for outside of ourselves. And I tell people all the time, don't look for gurus, be one. Be your own guru. Because guru simply means dispel the darkness. That's where it comes from. It comes from Sanskrit. And the meaning of guru is to dispel the darkness. And the way we dispel the darkness is we bring light to the space. We bring light to ourselves. We become enlightened about the way we think, the way we speak, what we focus on, who we hang around with, what we allow into our minds, what we watch on TV, what conversations we buy into, who we listen to on social media. If we become enlightened about all of that stuff, suddenly we'll realize that we're being affected and conditioned and molded and programmed by our environment. And it's 97% negative.
What is a simple way to bring light? Again, if somebody has just had some heartbreaking news, some real suffering going on, what can they do to bring light to their darkness?
Well, the first and most important thing is just to be kind to yourself. Just practice kindness with yourself and practice it with other people. Actively practice kindness. Go out of your way to be kind to yourself. Go out of your way to be kind to other people. When you go out of your way to be kind to yourself and other people, and you start making it a habit, what you'll see is you'll start noticing very quickly the positive and powerful impact of that, the positive and powerful ripple effect of that. Another way of saying that is just be compassionate to yourself. Have more compassion for yourself. Active compassion. Compassion doesn't show up until you are active in the process of it. Kindness doesn't show up until you are actively practicing it. Love doesn't show up until you are actively practicing it. These are all verbs. These are verbs.
Yes, you can't just sit and wait for it to happen.
No, these are verbs. You have to do them.
You have to take an action. It's like throwing that pebble in the water, isn't it?
By doing them, you become the being of them because we are beings. We are human beings. However, we have to also do things in order to remember that we're beings. We have to build the muscle.
Because we're energy.
Exactly.
Yeah. But we're energy as well. So you've got to get that energy circulating.
Got to get it rolling.
And we're always producing it. It's not like I have to now make an effort to create the energy. Actually, we're always creating energy around us. It's sometimes it's dark energy and we don't want the dark energy. It's not helping. And I guess this is part of the nurturing and the journey into the light, because you don't want to go from darkness to bright light, because you would get lost, wouldn't you? You'd kind of think, oh my God, now I don't know what to do in the light.
Sorry to interrupt you, Janet. Also have to remember, the thing that scares people the most, just like Marianne Williamson said, right, in her beautiful poem, Nelson Mandela used that as at his inauguration when he became president of South Africa. When he quoted Marianne Williamson, everyone thought it was Nelson Mandela's quote. It's actually not. It's Marianne Williamson's quote. And she said, what we're really afraid of is our light. And, you know, that beautiful few lines where she said, we think to ourselves, who am I to be talented, gorgeous, and beautiful? You know, that's what we think to ourselves. You see, intrinsically, we know that our light is so powerful that it actually creates enemies. And if we look at people who have walked this path before us, this enlightened path, and we are all enlightened masters, we have just forgotten. Michael Hutchence, the great lead singer of INXS, who unfortunately took his own life because he was so wounded, and he also had a bad fall and fell on his head, and something shifted inside his brain after that, and he got to the point where he was so unhappy he took his own life. But he sang in his song, didn't he? He said, we all have wings, just some of us don't know why. We are all angels. We are all enlightened masters. However, we have to walk through darkness to get to the place where we recognize the light inside of us. And we walk through the darkness in order to bring ourselves back to our own realization that actually what we're looking for is already inside of us.
Which is the truth also.
The truth, yeah. And there's only one absolute truth. It's called love. And love is compassionate action, right? Compassion is love in action. That's what compassion means, love in action. So we have to do compassion and we have to do love. We have to do kindness. But ultimately, coming back to what people are really terrified of is like if they do stand up and share their truth, they are so worried about the reaction they're going to get from the world around them. And then they remember the reaction that people like Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi, John Lennon, Martin Luther King, everybody who stood up for their own truth and spoke of love and spoke of light and spoke of compassion and spoke of injustice and spoke of inequality and racial division, etc. And what did all those people get? A bullet or nails on their hands and in their feet and crucified. And so that's what terrifies us. That's what the human race does. Man has always done that. Man has always followed people with a message, fallen in love with that person, that message, put them on a pedestal, and then got so terrified of the message, actually killed that person, then crucified them, put them in the ground, and then suddenly realized, oh my God, that person's a saint. Let's now make them a saint. And then we call them saints. But we killed them first before we made them saints. And then we do the same thing again and again and again.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, just going back to the Marianne Williamson quote, what was the quote you just said? Who am I?
Who am I to be brilliant or gorgeous, talented and beautiful?
Yeah. And I think there's a similar question that is probably not quite so vocal, but at times of suffering and loss, that I do think that somewhere inside, when you know you're going to be alive for a very long time, you don't really want to live in this pain. But I do think that there's a question inside the head or the heart, whichever, that says, who am I to ever be happy again? Who am I to deserve to laugh when my child can't laugh? But that can't be the truth.
But that's just ego, Janet. That's just the ego mind.
Do you think it also might come from the pressures of society and what is potentially expected of us to behave in a certain way?
That absolutely.
If you are looking like you're completely embracing life, comes from guilt.
Yeah, it comes from guilt. It's the guilt conversation. We've guilted each other out since the beginning of time. We look around. I've just had that right now with my beautiful partner, where her cousin is giving her a hard time because of the fact that she's living her life so successfully, so powerfully. Obviously, because of social media, they're watching her on Instagram, etc. And she's very good at what she does. She actually widely recognized as one of the world's best in her particular profession. But because her family don't like the way she's living so powerfully, because one of the family is very ill and very sick and very wounded as an alcoholic, and they're giving her a hard time because she's not looking after that other family member. She's having too much fun being too happy. And this is what we do to each other all the time. We guilt each other out. And on top of that, Janet, people are afraid of death. And people have bought hook, line, and sinker into death. And they're worried about what comes after death. So we have all of that stuff that comes through from the church. And the church has been guilting us out since the beginning of time. We are born sinners, the church tells us. We have to earn our way back to God. We have to earn God's love. We have to repent, atone for our sins. All of that is just such bollocks.
It's not true. But yeah, because I mean, even in this terrible state that I've been going through, there have been moments where I felt that light has shone through and it's powerful. And then I just think, well, what am I supposed to do with that? Well, not so much what will people think, but then maybe in my subconscious, I am thinking, what will people think?
Well, of course you are. Definitely. Without doubt, you are. You're worried about what your rest of your family will say if you suddenly start smiling and you're being happy. You're worried about what your other children will say.
Yeah. And it's up and down. Yes, for sure. And how can I lead them and all those kind of things? I mean, it's early days for me yet, but it does go up and down,
Yeah, it is early days. I understand exactly where you are. You are trapped in the emotion of grief. And, grief is important. You need to grieve. You need to be sad. There's part of you. But however, at the end of the day, what allows people to move through that quickly, like Maslow said that self-actualizing people move through death very quickly. They pass over death very quickly. They're not affected by it because they understand one important truth. There is no death. There is no death. And when you really get that in your heart, when you get it in your soul and you get it in your cells, your soul knows this already. But if you get it in your heart, you get it in your cells and it drops out of your head as an intellectual concept, there is no death because energy only changes form. And if you study physics, and Nikola Tesla said that one man's God is another man's physics. So energy just changes form. That's what physics is. If you study quantum physics, you know that nothing ever ends. Nothing ever begins. Everything is just always constant. It's constantly in motion. All energy is constantly in motion. It never ends. It never begins. It's never been created. It can never be destroyed. It just is. So therefore, death does not exist. There is just merely a passing from the seen to the unseen.
That's beautiful. Yes. Yeah.
From the physical to the metaphysical. And then again, from the metaphysical back to the physical, from the unseen back to the seen. That's the nature of life. It's a circle. So when you really get that in your heart and in your cells, your grief, gone. Disappeared.
And that is really beautiful. And that is something that comes in time to really, really get that message. And then you've got the soul connection. The energy of your soul connects to the energy of the soul of the person who you've lost.
Absolutely.
In those early stages, And I'm guessing that over time this still shows up, but it's a physical loss, isn't it? It's physically with your eyes not seeing those people, and that's the thing that we hold on to, losing that aspect of life rather than seeing that transform into this beauty of the soul.
Can I say something about that? Because you just used the word twice and you used another word once, and then you said something beautiful. And if I just pick up on that, so you said loss, the physical loss, and you emphasized that, the physical loss, and immediately in that moment you had a chemical reaction in your body. And then you said losing twice. You said it's losing that. And then you said something beautiful. You said when you come to the transformation into the soul's awareness, there is no loss. This is the biggest challenge we face as human beings. There is no such thing as loss. That's a terrible word. You cannot lose anything. Nothing is ever missing. Ever. Ever. Nothing is missing. And when you get that, seriously, and with anybody who's listening, the only reason people, you know, end up suffering, and let me just draw a very, very fine distinction here, which may be very difficult for a lot of people to understand, especially if they're grieving and they've lost someone, especially if a parent has lost a child. I've got a lot of friends who have lost children. I told you, Janet, one of my friends in South Africa lost two children in the same swimming pool, years apart. They both drowned in the same pool. And then, you know, people get into all kinds of judgment. Well, how could he let that happen? You know, how could they drown, a second child drown in the same pool? Let go of any judgment. What you need to understand is there's nothing missing, nothing wrong. This is an energetic, spiritual world that we live in, and the earth is a spiritual domain. It's an energetic domain. It may seem real, it may seem physical, and it is physical on one level. However, it's metaphysical in its construction. Now, what that means is that we've come here to have spiritual lessons as human beings. And so the greatest lesson that we've come to remind ourselves of in the contrast and in the physical experience of ourselves as a human is that nothing is missing. Nothing is missing. Nothing is lost. There is no such thing as loss. And as long as we keep saying I've lost something, the physical loss, all you're doing is you're regenerating the physical expression of suffering. You bring in the pain.
And you bring in the pain. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And when you can let that go, the pain is gone instantly. Because now what's left, think about it like this. When you remove the concept of loss from the mind and the conversation of loss from the language in your mind, what's left is the energetic presence of your son. And when you see that, you'll feel it instantly. And all you'll feel is love and overwhelming joy. Because in that moment, that is the truth for you. And then what you realize is you have, like you said, you have that transformation into the soul consciousness, and you say, oh my God, it was never missing. I feel my son. I feel him right now. I close my eyes. I can feel his arms around me. And that's when people start to see. That's when they start having visions, when suddenly they appear. And I said to you yourself, remember I said to you, I said, your son will appear to you one day and you will see nothing's lost.
I look forward to that. I look forward to that. Alan, we're going to have to bring this wonderful conversation to a close again. Fantastic. I think, you know, you're going to have to come back.
I don't mind coming back a third time. I'm happy
to. We'll just keep talking. Look, the good grief conversation is going on for a long time, but this has been really enlightening and a wonderful, juicy, emotional conversation. I've loved it. Thank you so much.
Janet, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being with you, my friend.
Wow. That was such an enlightening conversation. I kind of, towards the end there, it blew my mind a little bit. But everything that he was saying, it really challenges the situation that you're currently in with a painful situation, and understanding how, you know, the ego is attached to the pain. Just such a powerful conversation. If you would like to connect with Alan, I'd firstly recommend his Facebook group that he was talking about, The Awakened Souls. If you just go into Facebook, you can search for that and you'll find that. Lots of meditation and really beautiful things on there. Also, his website is alanspeaks.com, and that's Alan with two L's. So alanspeaks.com. That's how you can find out more about Alan. And also in the podcast extras, Alan has given me a PDF of the chapter that he's written for the book that he was talking about that has been published. So you can join the podcast extras by going to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. And when you go there, you just sign up to the podcast extras. I've given three options because maybe you would like to support this broadcast. First of all, there is a free option because I believe this information is relevant to everybody and I don't want to exclude anybody. So there is a free option. And then there is the option to sign up for the price of a paperback and the option to sign up for the price of a hardback. So your support is very, very much appreciated and I look forward to connecting with you through the podcast extras. Now, you've been listening on UK Health Radio. I am your host, Janet Jones, and I look forward to speaking with you next week when we have more amazing guests sharing their stories, their transitions, and any tips and inspiration that will help you too. So that's me, Janet Jones, signing out for now, but I look forward to speaking to you very soon. Bye for now.